Chapter 10 Carrion World. Men like Gendor Scryvok were the first hints of the wickedness that would befall my legion, said Kurz to his corpse statue. Selfish, interested only in power. There were many like him. In my impatience to see your vision fulfilled, I marginalized them rather than purging them, relying on the most faithful. Men like Sevatar. Sevatar understood. He saw the need for fear to bring order to the galaxy. My other captains were allowed to wage war as they liked, so long as they achieved my objectives. I did not pay their misdeeds enough attention. By the time I noticed the rot, it had run its roots deep into the heart of many companies. His face wrinkled in disdain. I was better alone. You made me a general, yet did not give me the capacity to act like one. So many errors, father. He flipped through his book, smiling at certain passages, scowling at others. Such a thing it is to write a book. I am tempted now to scratch whole sections out and begin them again, but then that would result in a different book. What has been set down must be preserved. It can only be changed so much until it is a new thing altogether, and the truth of its original nature lost. He closed the book and stalked around the chamber, passing around the back of his mock father, stepping over the savaged body of the unfortunate slave. He straightened, adopting the air of a man dictating a letter, or a scholar master lecturing his students. I was never true to myself, always trying to do what you expected of me for little thanks. When I came here again to this place, I realized that I had to stop trying. I had to embrace my fate. I am a monster, father, and should be punished for it. That is what I am, and that is where my destiny leads. He smiled sadly. Why fight it? Flashes of things yet to be forced themselves into Elvar's nightmares. Giants clad in armour the colour of midnight storms crowded him, each so huge he felt small as a rat. Dust raced through a chill atmosphere, stinging his skin, scratching his eyes. Conrad Kurz looked at him for one last time, and Elvar saw he did not care at all what happened to him. Dozens of pairs of slanted ruby eyes shone their malevolence upon Elvar. "My lord!" he cried. An armoured hand reached for him. Gentle trilling woke Elvar from his troubled sleep, not that he experienced any other kind. He rolled over, his single eye bleary, the numbers on the chronograph swimming in his vision. In primitive digital sticks of green, the chronograph displayed the time and the subjective date. Neither of these measures were as important as the third set of data, a countdown ticking towards zero. He stared at it, not believing that after so long it was nearing the end. "It's time," he said. He rubbed his left hand over his face. It had taken him a long time to get used to doing that with his left rather than his right. Scars ran down his cheeks from the time he'd forgotten the augmetic claw Kurz had given him for a right hand. He groaned and sat on the edge of the bed. There was recaf to be drunk, and a long day ahead, but first a small moment of contemplation. This was a momentous occasion. Long in coming. The time had come to prep the ship for deceleration. It took him three attempts to stand. Kurz's boredom had cost Elvar dearly. In the years since his arrival, Kurz had taken three more of Elvar's fingers, the lower half of his left leg, not all of it gone in one easy session, but nibbled away, centimetre by centimetre over months. Kurz had torn out Elvar's right eye in a night of terror that still made him want to scream. A smooth patch of skin crossed by an ugly, puckered scar covered over the socket. The worst injury was to Elvar's right arm. That was the one that had nearly killed him. One evening, Kurz had pounced on him without warning, borne him away, and, tittering madly, had peeled the skin from his forearm and hand with such agonizing slowness that Elvar had begged that he rip it off in one go to get it over with. Kurz had left him in a bloody heap. He'd contracted an infection shortly after and nearly died. When the Primarch returned, it was to save him. Elva's simpering gratitude for the crude augmetic Kurz replaced his arm with shocked him. He came closest to becoming a snivelling cur at that point. Afterwards, he expected to break, waited for it, but it never happened. Under pressure, part of Elva's being compressed into a small cold diamond, and this place of strength became a harbour for his sanity. As bad as things got, he never went mad. He never broke. He prided himself on that, and Kurz seemed to respect him for it. An equilibrium of sorts was struck between defiance and deference, and between terror and Elva's determination to survive. There was no other way to be. There was nowhere to hide. Kurz could hear Elva's heart from the other end of the vessel. He could taste his fear on the air. The multiple locks and bars Elva put on his door were little barrier to the Primarch's strength, but he used them anyway. Elva reflected on these things as he limped through the Sheldrune. Without maintenance from Overton's piratical crew, the ship had suffered. A lot of the things that he needed to do could no longer be controlled from the command deck. He was prepared for a long day. As he worked, he waited for Kurz to appear and butcher another part of his body. Respect did not stop the Primarch. He couldn't help himself. Kurz paid no attention to Elva's pleas or his tears, not when the darkness was on him. But after each session of abuse, he would treat Elva as if nothing had happened. Sometimes he would spend time with Elva and instruct him in various matters. In those rare days, Elva glimpsed the regal being beneath the filth. Elva's world expanded under his tutelage, even as, on other occasions, his body was whittled away, knife-stroke by knife-stroke, by the ragged king. For much of the voyage, Elva didn't see Kurz. Weeks could go by, when he had no idea where the Primarch was lurking. Occasionally, he found evidence of the Primarch's presence. One time, he came across 100 rats crucified on tiny crosses, each one's abdominal cavity carefully opened and pinned back. Several were still alive, their tiny hearts twitching. The amount of work Kurz must have done to create this macabre display chilled him more than anything. Against this background of fear, Elva attempted to do his duties as best he could, until, in the end, terror became mundane. He reached a switchboard for the starboard thruster array. The remote system to set the ship for directional change had burned out, and he'd needed to wire in the controls directly. He checked his makeshift repairs to the activation circuit. It looked like it still worked. If it didn't, then the thrusters wouldn't fire to flip the ugly freighter around, and they'd carry on their merry way forever. He closed the box door. He missed Kurz when he was absent. Throughout the pain and the boredom, the Sheldrune coasted on towards Sagualsa. It ran quietly, its halls host to nothing but ghosts and rats creeping up from the bilges, its lumens dimming and dying one by one. Elva limped painfully to the Engenarium. The arm was the only gift Kurz gave him. His stolen leg was replaced by a simple peg of metal he'd had to make himself. It had amused Kurz to shorten his leg further after Elva had made it, so it had never fit right. Elva was no metalsmith, and the leg was uncomfortable, its cup socket chafing perpetually at his stump. Simple freighters like the Sheldrune lacked the giant propulsive units and the reactors to power them that mightier craft possessed, relying for the most part on inertia. Nevertheless, the energy required to accelerate to its top speed was considerable, as was that required to slow back down. Elva had waited for this moment for 20 months, looking forward so much to the break in his monotonous existence that it had become something of an obsession. Turning over such a long and cumbersome ship was a technically challenging exercise, especially when undertaken alone. Now it had come, he found the preparation tedious. It went on, and so much could go wrong. The last few hours were hectic. There was a little leeway to his deadline, but not enough. and the final moment he could possibly fire the main engines rushed at him with terrifying speed. By the time all was done, he was tired. His aching eye stared into the lights of false stars hanging in the bridge cartolith. He'd checked it 1,000 times already, but felt the need to key his calculations into the ship's primitive astrogator one final time. Its simple logic engine hummed inside its dented casting. Eventually, the green indicator lumen came on with an audible snap and flickered at him impatiently, the same way it had done every other time. Elva grunted, then went around the bridge priming switches and rerouting key controls to the command throne. He hauled himself over and sat down. Fragments of the chains with which Kurz had bound him to the seat still hung there. The blood of the crew clung blackly to the deck, years later, reduced to a kind of tar. Once he'd got the heat back on in there, it had rotted slowly, stinking the place out for weeks. Only stains remained of human life. He didn't even notice them anymore. He pulled the brass keyboard over his lap and activated the control systems. Everything was ready. He looked behind him, half expecting the Primarch's abyssal eyes to glitter in the gloom there, but there was no sign of him. Elva was disappointed. "Activate," he said to no one, and activated the attitudinal thrusters. A growing pressure pushed down on him as the ship swung about on its axis. "No going back now," he muttered. Moments of crisis came and went, each headed off before it became disaster. Adrenaline granted him speed and focus. Once the ship was turned, he spooled up the main drive and ignited its plasma jets. The final act went unexpectedly smoothly. Before he knew it, they were slowing down. It was inevitable that Elva would feel a sense of anticlimax. All his effort and his hard-won expertise were applied successfully. Now it was done. Even the change in the ship's noises, vibrating and rumbling with distant engine roar after years of silence, was a novelty for only a few moments before it became the new constant. Months stretched ahead. Months of waiting for Kurz to strike or to come speak with him. Equally terrifying experiences. And then what? Elva shuddered. He left the bridge in a hurry and barricaded himself in his room. There he picked up a bottle of rough spirits he'd been saving for the day and drank it all without a shred of celebration. Finally. Finally, Sagualsa lay beneath them. Elva looked at it through the scratched observation blister, the sole window anywhere on the whole of the Sheldrune outside of the airlocks. His manically grinning face reflected off the inside. He was a dishevelled lunatic, he thought. And so what? To get there, he'd had to provide himself with the education Overton had singularly failed to give, and so much more besides. He was now a capable engineer, astrogator, pilot and captain. "I'm a one-man crew," he said to himself proudly. The cost of his expertise stared back at him. His face, never pretty, was ruined. The prize his efforts had won him was not much to look at either. Sagualsa was the ugliest planet he had ever seen, and all he had ever seen were ugly worlds. A sphere whose colour palette extended solely to various hues of grey. Continental plates frozen by long inactivity scabbed the edges of dust seas. The sun was small, white, and warmthless. Grey, white, and black. The view was of a universe bled of all life. A reflected face appeared next to his, huge and inhuman, pale and colourless as the scene on the other side of the armour glass blister. Dark hair cut Kurz's face into ragged stripes. Black holes stared where the glint of soul light should shine. Elva's grin became a rictus. His heart leapt in his chest. Sweat prickled all over his body. "Sagualsa," said Conrad Kurz. "You have done well." Kurz's voice, so close to Elva's ear in the cramped blister, sent painful shivers through him that reawakened the agony of torture and stabbed at phantom limbs with hot daggers.
"What now, my lord?"
"We land," said Kurz. "Prepare the ship shuttle." The Primarch departed as soundlessly as he had arrived. When Elva ventured out from the blister into the gangway only a second later, the Primarch was nowhere to be seen. Elva added atmospheric shuttle pilot to his list of skills. He'd anticipated Kurz's lack of interest in flying to the surface. There was no simulator on board the Sheldrune. Venturing into the void risked becoming lost in it, so his experience was restricted to lifting the shuttle off and landing it within the cramped docking bay, and reading the operating manual so many times he saw the words floating in his vision when he fell asleep at night. He was well aware that was pitifully insufficient. Leaving the Sheldrune was child's play. He had become totally familiar with the battered shuttle's systems by then. Nevertheless, he was not naive enough to believe atmospheric entry would be easy, and he was not wrong. Sagualsa did not appreciate visitors. Winds tearing around its upper atmosphere sent the ship into a bouncing descent that had Elva wrestling with controls imbued with a sudden malicious life of their own. The ship slewed from side to side, sending it kilometres away from Kurz's polar landing zone. Elva dragged too hard at the controls, his overcompensation sending them kilometres away in the opposite direction. The ship bounced, swerved, and dropped down through the violent Sagulusan air. Ventral vid cameras showed nothing but the blankness of a dust storm rising to meet them. Graphical displays depicted the slalom twist of their landing corridor as Elva's inexpert piloting bent it out of shape. Alarms chimed and bleeped at him from every quarter. His hands slipped sweatily on the flight sticks. The engines howled in complaint. They fell through the cloud ceiling into fogs of dust that made the atmospheric engines scream. More alarms joined them as robust components suffered friction damage. The wind speed picked up, tossing the small ship around. Elva gritted his teeth, a soft grumble of concentration in his throat rising to a moan of panic. They were coming in too fast, too hard. Nothing he did seemed to help. Throughout their plummet, Kurz sat at the back of the shuttle. There were four other seats in the cockpit, all too small for him, so he sat on the floor with his back to the door, long, dirty fingers gripping the backs of the chairs in front of him, so hard the worn upholstery split. The reflection of his unblinking glower in the cockpit canopy swam in and out of Elva's view. Wind howled around the ship. The shuttle pitched violently to the left, nearly flinging Elva from his seat, like a horse dissatisfied with an amateur rider. The ship's minor systems were less bullish and eager to help. Proximity alarms screamed. Dark grey crags flashed by to starboard. Elva yelled, yanking the ship to the side, tipping it further back to port, then struggled to bring it back under control. It went into a drifting spin. Altimeters whirred downwards. "I would fire the braking thrusters and extend the landing struts if I were you," said Kurz calmly.
"Yes, my lord!"
Elva's good hand swept banks of toggle switches in the hope of activating the landing gear on the way to punching the thruster switch. The ship bucked, swung around. The struts squealed out of their housing, bringing new notes from the gales screaming around the ship. The altimeter was still running down too fast. Zero approached with terrifying speed.
"Brace, my lord!"
shouted Elva. Kurz remained unmoving. Elva dragged back to the flight sticks, twisting them, trying without success to halt the ship's spin and level it out. A second later, hard rocks greeted the shuttle with a resounding crash. The landing claws must have taken the brunt of the impact, for the ship remained in one piece. Still, Elva thought his spine had been kicked out of the top of his head. He blacked out, coming round to the ship sitting more or less level upon a plain of grey sand, rippling with shrouds of gale-chased dust. He was frankly surprised to be alive. The instruments winked and burbled quietly, all their complaints over. Green and yellow replaced the red of alarm. Environmental readouts showed racing wind and freezing temperatures, but the air carried sufficient oxygen to breathe.
"I did it," he said.
For the second time that day, a crazed grin split his face.
"I did it!"
He looked around for the Primarch. The cockpit door was open onto the small cargo bay. Kurz was approaching the ramp release. Elva looked at the dust storm in alarm. He needed protective equipment, goggles at least, and a respirator. Dust like that would shred his lungs.
"My lord, please, wait!"
Elva struggled to release his restraints before staggering up from his pilot's seat. His neck twinged mightily. His head ached. The ship rocked on its landing claws in the storm.
My lord, please, I need to prepare!
Kurz turned to regard him silently, his hand hovering over the button. Elder pulled himself through the door, half throwing himself at the supply locker. He dragged out his breathing kit and shrugged the purification tanks onto his back. He had no time to pull on the coat he'd brought down from orbit.
We are home, said Kurz. I'm going out.
His hand descended towards the gangplank switch.
Wait!
Shouted Elver. Gasping, he struggled his backpack on, twisting knobs to activate it. He couldn't run the checks he should. He was trying to catch the respirator mouthpiece swinging on its rubber tube when Kurz pressed the door release with a gentle finger and let Sagualsa within the ship. Wind shriek overrode the door mechanism's hum. Barely had the door opened a crack before talcum-fine dust blasted into Elver's face, drying out his throat and mouth instantaneously and cutting at his innards with razor edges. He tugged on his respirator. Like all his equipment, it was a composite piece, salvaged from the best components on the Sheldrune. Even with a crew's complement to choose from, it was still little better than mediocre. As the ramp descended further, larger pieces of debris clattered in, borne on a wind that slapped at Elver's face. He screwed up his remaining eye, knowing that to look into that wind was to ruin his cornea and lose what little sight remained to him. When he'd got his goggles on and blinked the grit from his streaming eye, Kurz was already walking down the ramp onto the murderous surface, slow and stately as a ghost attending his own funeral.
My lord!
Elver shouted. But the rubber and plastic of his mask muzzled him, absorbing his words and turning them into a risible honk.
My lord!
Kurz walked through the wind without trouble, erect as a statue, his cloak wrapped around him tight as a winding sheet. Elver struggled against the raw strength of the storm, as the whole planet seemed to exert itself against him. His leg stump ached ferociously as he set his crude prosthetic against the deck and leaned hard into the gale. Dust whirled the shuttle interior. The wind tore up anything not strapped down. Already the paint was pitting, and drifts of merciless sand, unwelcomely sharp, colonized sheltered corners.
My lord!
He shouted. Elver experienced an appalling panic that he would not see Conrad Kurz again, that he would go out into the storm and be lost. Kurz was a monster, his tormentor, but there was a strange bond between them. At the same moment, the seductive whisper of freedom enticed him. He could shut the door, deny the wind, fly away to the Sheldrune, and make all speed for whatever system he could find. The nearest was 10 years sailing, but there were enough supplies aboard to last him. He would be the master of his own vessel, still young. He could raise a crew, sell off the cargo, and ply a new route between fresh stars. In a few years he might even be able to afford new augmetics to repair the damage Kurz had inflicted. Kurz. He hesitated. The Primarch was lost to sight behind the wind and its merciless cargo of sand. He had moments to decide. Freedom or horror? For all his defiance, he knew freedom was a lie. The very concept was absurd. He had been a slave. Now he was a slave to a different man. In a galaxy of unfree men, a slave must define himself by his master. He served death itself. What more powerful lord could there be?
My lord!
He shouted, staggering into the storm.
Wait! Wait, my lord!
Deadly cold tore into him with every bit as much force as the wind. He gasped as its claws bit. He staggered forwards. It was too late to return for his coat. Kurz was a pillar of night in the grey of Sagualsa's permanent twilight. Elver hurried after him, struggling against the weather where the Primarch seemed to drift serenely through it. The slow pursuit continued for an hour. Elver lost feeling in his limbs. Grit got into his augmetic arm, causing it to malfunction. More gathered in the cup of his peg leg, tearing the scars of his stump. Still, he pushed himself on. Gradually, the storm spent its fury, dropping by degree, until the wind was gone completely, and Elver was walking through a stilled world where fine particulate floated in the air, and the only noise was the rasp of his breath in his respirator mask. Kurz stayed the same distance ahead, never drawing away, never nearing. He saw now that the Primarch waited, when he dropped too far behind, until Elva gained a little ground, then moved on ahead. A blackness emerged from the gritty fog. At first, Elva took it to be a mountain, but it was far mightier than that. The dusty air parted, giving up a huge building. Black stone that remained at a high polish despite the cutting nature of the weather gleamed at him. A small patch of white near the horizon showed the position of the sun. The glow of this pathetic sunset caught on battlements and mighty portals, and windows filled with fine stonework and finer glass. The Primarch stopped before a yawning gateway set into a curtain wall 100 meters high. Elva doubled his pace, and with great weariness joined his tormentor. "My house," said Conrad Kurz, though the word did no justice to so immense an abode. By then much closer, and with the air clearing as dust snowed down to rest, Elva saw that the palace was unfinished. Many doors and windows were empty halls. The upper reaches ended in reinforcement spikes, awaiting higher stories. Not only unfinished, he thought, but abandoned. Construction equipment and pallets of materials hid beneath dunes heaped around the wall's foot, their tarpaulins ripped by years of storms. Coverings for scaffolding hung in limp flags. There was no soul abroad beside the two of them, no life of any kind. "Now we wait," said Kurz.
"For what?"
asked Elva.
"For whom?" Kurz said. "For my sons."
Elva retrieved supplies from their shuttle and set up a small camp in the gateway for his lord. They were out of the worst of the dust and winds, but it was still cold, still inhospitable. There must have been many halls within the castle, but when Elva pressed him to go inside, Kurz refused to enter.
"We shall go within later," he said determinedly. "Now is not the fated moment. We wait here until the time is right."
He said nothing more, but sat down in the lee of the gate tunnel, where he stayed unmoving, his head bowed for days. Elva feared he might have expired, but dared not check. Kurz's sons came in dribs and drabs, announced by roaring in the night. Elva emerged from his sleeping sack amid a shower of displaced sand. The Primarch was standing now, a shade darker than the night, framed in the gullet of the gate. The thundering of gunships echoed around the sky. The storm's load did not fall easily. Held aloft by electrostatic charge and lingering so long, Elva wondered if it were possible ever to see the stars from Saguas's surface. When Elva reached for objects, he was rewarded with flashes of electricity and stung flesh. The same effect dragged nets of light behind the ships as they came down, and though the craft themselves were invisible in the dusty air, the blue lightning pursuing them danced bright announcements across the sky. The ship set down with noisy avian shrieks some way from the unfinished fortress. Elva went to the gate mouth and awaited his master's offspring. The first of them emerged as a group 5 strong. Instrument glow from their helm lenses preceded them, red slants in the dark, like the eyes of animals. They came to their father, who towered over them as they towered over Elva. It was so dark, their forms were fuzzy, with hard edges highlighted by the bloody glow of their helm lenses, and the actinic flashes of discharge earthing itself through their battle plate. The lightning painted on their armour blinked under this brief illumination, confusing their shape further. Symbols covered other panels. Most had death's heads painted over their faceplates, and the skulls of their victims knocked hollowly together on chains hanging from their shoulders. Spending years alone with a Primarch did not lessen Elva's awe for these beings. They were more terrible creatures than their gene father. He could see that. Kurz was clearly insane, tortured by conflicting drives and a monstrous sense of injustice. These warriors were not mad. They followed their lord's despicable example freely.
"Soul hunter," said Kurz.
Their leader knelt in the dust, followed by his fellows.
"Night hunter,"
said the warrior.
"You came," said Kurz.
For the only time, Elva saw him smile at his warriors.
I foresaw your return, my lord.
The soul hunter angled his helm upwards.
We heard your call. We are your loyal sons. We are here.
So few of you, said Kerr sadly. The soul hunter's reply was hard.
We bled. We died. We fought on Terra. You were not there. Why did you forsake us?
Get up, Talos, said Curse tersely. His indulgence soured at the question. The rest of you, First Claw of Tenth Company. They rose. Is there news of Sevatar? Asked Curse. I thought he would come first. Clicks sounded from the helmets of the group as they conversed privately.
You do not know?
Asked Talos eventually. The last I saw of him, he came unasked to my side aboard the Invincible Reason, said Kurz. I lost him as I fought the lion.
For that reason we thought you might know what became of him, said Talos. We have had no word of him since then.
Another of them spoke, a cold killer's voice, harshened by helm speakers.
He must be dead, my lord. The lion took him and he took you. None have heard of his fate since Thramas.
We do not know that he is dead, Zal, said another.
It is most likely, said Talos. Horus lost, said the killer.
Kurz gave his sons a pitying look.
As was ordained, he said. Do you believe it could have been any other way?
The killer was angry at the reply and turned his head away. More of the giants were emerging from the dusty night. Their eyes swarmed, dull as noctilucent insects. Kurz asked many times of the one named Sevatar, but no information regarding his fate was forthcoming. All said the same, that he was lost to the Dark Angels. Kurz surveyed his sons.
You are the first to come. Many more will follow. All of you have fought hard and are exhausted. I have endured events far beyond your understanding. In that time, I have had my faith tested by demons and my brothers alike. I return from the dead for but a while.
Don't speak so, Lord, said Talos. Time may tell a different story.
Fate is fixed, Kurz said. The path of events cannot be changed. Horus was always going to lose. I am going to die. When I am gone, you will take the truth to the stars and tear down the edifice of lies built by my father.
Until then,
he looked up at the half-finished walls of the palace.
We shall build a fastness the likes of which has never been seen, within chambers furnished by the nightmares of better men. There I shall write my scripture of despair, the great antidote to the hope which plagues our species.
Some energy fled him, along with the words. He turned from his sons then. Elva unwittingly caught his gaze, and perhaps due to Elva's hidden gift, a flash of understanding passed between them. Elva drank in knowledge unfiltered, comprehending suddenly and completely that Kurz only half believed what he said.
You fear you are wrong, whispered Elva.
He couldn't help himself. He knew the moment he said it he was doomed. Kurz's body language became dangerous, prompting a question from one of his men.
What of him, my lord? What of your slave?
Kurz held Elva's eye. Black pointed teeth showed between Kurz's parted lips.
I am done with him, Captain Vandred.
Dispose of him as you wish.
Dozens of pairs of slanted ruby eyes shone their malevolence upon Elva.
My lord!
Elva cried. An armored hand reached for him.